open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this.
Coming to you live sometimes from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you for the next 2 hours, talking Browns, talking football. We can talk Super Bowl. One thing we don't have to talk about is dip etiquette. People have been texting me all night. The dipping they're good with. I have been chastised a fair amount, though, for my cake etiquette. I'm not going to lie. I'll own it. I'll take it. I'll take responsibility for it. Beatbox listened to it. I told him he'd enjoy it. He said it was the funniest half hour we've done. And he said that he doesn't understand the issue with the dipping, but he's like, you're way out of line with the cake, man.
This is, okay, and we don't have to relive this moment anymore. But I'm not against you, okay? But for the sake of being against you, I will speak even further about
it. What did your wife
it.
Think, though? Your wife listened to it. You told me.
She thought it was hilarious. Again, very. We listened to the first segment, 18 minutes. And here's the thing, okay? Had the dip been in a uniform bowl,
okay,
right next to the chips,
okay,
dipping out of the bowl, a la dipping in the salsa, as you said on the show yesterday, not far-fetched by any means.
So you think because it was in the crock pot?
Because it was in the crock pot.
But that's its vessel. What you could have done is,
it's
you
the
know,
vessel of it was prepared in. Do you eat a steak, like, right out of the pan that it was cooked in?
No, but it's different because a crock pot, as you well know, has the part, the vessel where it actually does cook is removable from the crock pot so that you can then use it as a
but
serving
was it?
Piece. No, but that's user error.
Tell me, I don't know how to use a crock pot? Tell Vanessa she doesn't know how to use
no,
a crock
I'm not
pot.
Talking, I'm just calling that's presentation error. That's
yeah, so that's my one issue is, and maybe it was, we'll call it a hosting error.
Okay. No. I don't think there were any errors at all. I think everybody was just fine. Okay.
There were no errors. Nathan
no
was
errors.
Wrong.
Nobody was wrong. Everybody was right. And if it was wrong, I don't want to be right.
Am I right in saying that, Gibbs?
What was it? I'm sorry.
Because, for example, okay, my they're upstairs. It ended up like being an afterthought once people started pouring in. My wife made her first attempt at doing monkey bread in a crock pot.
What's that?
Gibbs, have you had monkey bread?
I have.
What is it?
Very good.
It's very good. It's like, you know, you take like biscuits, you know, you pop the biscuits, you kind of break them up, you add, I don't know, it's like a sweet treat, donut-ish-y tasting,
okay,
whatever.
Okay.
But they stick together. That's why they kind of call it monkey bread, right? So it was in the crock pot, and we let it go a little too high. So like one side of it got burnt. And of course, we were just like, we're not going to, you know, we forgot about it. So we just turned it off and let it whatever. So would you consistently dive into the crock pot where other people's, you know, are going to basically pull in, put on a plate, and then eat off the plate? Would you consistently dive in and go right to mouth out of the crock pot multiple times for something like that?
It's bread?
It's like, I mean, it's like a doughy, donut-y kind of treat.
What do you have over there? Like, do you have something in there, for example? Like, would you have, like, tongs for people to pull it out? Like, what?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
I probably would just tong it. It's about the dip and a scoop.
But there was a large, very large spoon.
I don't know. I'd have to see it. I'm going to say, listen.
Okay.
I have no problem going right in there. So I'd have to assess the situation, but I'm not afraid.
We know this.
Let there be.
We learned a lot in the last 48 hours.
Let there be no mistake whatsoever. Browns Daily Twitter, shocking response from Zagura. Listen, Gibbs, don't hide behind that. Just come right at from BGSU Gibbs.
I don't have to hide. I'm not hiding.
Oh, you're hiding.
I'm on the Browns. I run the Browns Daily Twitter handle.
What did I even say? Day two. There is no gate.
No gate here. I'm right.
That's right.
Shocking response.
Yeah.
Zagura's right.
Uh-huh. The pie. We got some people are telling us about monkey bread. Anyway, by the way, football related, since people want to suck football, I know that. Did you see Jared Goff and what he had to say about the combine?
Yeah. Doing everything.
Yeah.
Nothing to hide.
Good.
I love that.
So do I.
All these guys have been babies for years, and he's going to go out there. He's exactly right. I've got nothing to hide. Why would you?
Why? Yeah.
Why would you? I think this is great.
And so you know, having been there,
yes,
that general managers, scouts, and coaches hold it against you and almost give you like a derogatory mark if you don't do anything at the combine. Because I, for whatever reason, I had a shoulder injury, you know, that I kind of was nursing back after the long football season. I played in the Senior Bowl, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, boom, you're hit with the combine. So I did not bench press at the combine. And the first question, if I interviewed with 16 teams.
Why aren't you benching?
Are you doing everything at the combine? I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing it, but I'm not going to do it. Well, why aren't you?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? You immediately raise a red flag about, are you not accurate? Are you not confident? Can you not?
What are you trying to hide?
What are you trying to hide? Are you not ready for the big stage? Whatever they can do to draw out, you know, anything negative about you or see your true colors.
I bet Connor Cook won't throw.
Because agents and business managers and these like life coaches and media coaches have you like a zombie in there, like that the second you go off script and go humanized, they want to see that because that's their best way of analyzing what would happen in the face of adversity as a Cleveland Brown in this building. You're not playing, you know, you get into a car accident, you get pulled over, you know, you have money in your pocket and there's a casino 20 minutes away. All those little things, they just want to learn.
Yep.
You know, and they're not going to drop you out of a round because of it, but it's part of your evaluation. And if they didn't do those things, shame on them.
And you know what I like about it is that, you know, Goff is coming out and I believe that he's the best quarterback, so I'm happy about this.
He's reading the mock drafts, and he knows he's the best quarterback.
And he obviously believes it, because when you think about it, quarterbacks who elect not to throw at the combine and then go and throw at their pro days, what they're doing is not sharing the same field with other quarterbacks, making the same throws back to back to back to back, so that you can compare just right there apples to apples.
Yeah, and this is even furthermore, and I've heard this is after – you know, going to the combine. This is from scouts as you grow in relationships with people in your building. It's they don't like when guys don't throw. It's because, and you hate to say it, but it makes more work for them. Then you have to go split screen and evaluate every throw at Carson Wentz's pro day and every throw that Jared Goff did at his pro day. And then you got to look at Paxton Lynch's pro day. And then how did they do at the combine? Who did what? And you're piecing this map together when you can literally just run through the quarterback film from the combine and go, there's Wentz, there's Goff, there's Lynch, there's Cook, there's Jones. Boom, boom, boom. He struggled at this. And you can make your evaluation in a matter of hours instead of like piecing together and cutting, you know, and snipping all this stuff. It just makes for more work.
Do you think that what his, you know, decision and public decision to come out and say this much in advance combine that he's throwing is going to put pressure on the other guys to throw?
Yes.
And do you think they will?
I think a majority of them will. I think there's a guy or two that he and his agent are just like dead set on their plan, that they're going to do it a different way, thinking that it'll work to their advantage some way, shape, and form.
So I'm pretty sure, didn't last year Mariota did everything, right?
Yep.
Did Winston?
I don't know.
I don't know if they threw, though. But I know that Johnny's here. Johnny, Teddy,
Derek,
Carr, and I think and
Bortles.
I don't think any of them threw that
I don't
year.
Think any of them did either.
I like it. I like the Goff zone. Does it make you like him a little bit more, Gibbs? Or is it still wait and see?
With Goff?
Yeah.
I'm not sold on any of them. Like, I'm just not – I don't have that yes. And the combine I don't think is going to do that for me because I don't take a lot of stock in the combine.
Who did you like, for example, in the Teddy draft? Who did? Was there anybody that was like yes for you in that draft?
I liked Braxton – or not Braxton. I like Teddy. I was hot and cold on Carr. One week I'm like, yes.
Uh-huh.
Other weeks I'm like, nah, I don't know. Bortles was hit. I did like Teddy. Teddy was the one guy that consistently.
I think Bortles for me.
I think Goff can be Teddy plus because I think he's got more stature.
Correct. A couple things going back to that draft for me. Not that you asked me. As I thought.
Yeah. What did you think of that draft?
Thank you. As we crept closer to the draft, the link between the Jaguars and Bortles was very strong, so you knew Bortles was kind of out of play for the Browns. I thought what I saw of Teddy Bridgewater, because you got to watch him a lot on Thursday nights, you know, in the ACC and so on and so forth, so I would always tune in and watch him, knowing that he was a good player to watch him at Louisville. But I did think still, even in the uniform, the one thing that scares me about Teddy Bridgewater is he's just that lean little body.
He's not a huge guy.
I didn't like that. I didn't like that about Teddy, and I didn't like that essentially about the face of our franchise. When I saw Carr, I saw, as Gibbs kind of said, I loved when I saw the polished, confident Derek Carr making the throws. What scared the crap out of me was his bowl game, you know, against elite competition. And some of the times when he wasn't on his game, it was just really bad.
He's got a lot of Jay Cutler to him. He can make some yes. unbelievable throws and makes them just
he really does.
Horrific. You know,
and that scares – and for me, I was –
I'll take that.
I was never, never, never a Johnny guy.
Right there with you.
Not my – I was just not for – it's just not right for us. It's I don't want the stunt. I don't want him. I don't want the what if he turns out, because I thought the what if was – a 25% chance, but there's a 75% chance you can fail.
See, I think at the time, though, too, everybody thought we were going to use our number 4 pick on him.
Right.
And I think that's what scared me. It wasn't that I was anti-Johnny, because I said, you know what, if they took Johnny at 23, if he was somehow still there, I could live with it. I wasn't pro-Johnny, but okay, if you're going to grab a quarterback at 23, fine. I mean, I wanted Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, but even going back to that, that's what makes, you know, the Justin Gilbert pick is absolutely befuddling. When you don't go get your quarterback at 7 or at 4, right? You move back. You take a position that essentially you feel like you're good at. Not great at. You've got Joe Hayden, but you have questions outside of him because of Buster's one more year and free agency. And you go and you use him. And I don't mind Johnny being the second pick, but I just think if you would have got franchise QB at 4, you get the pick of the litter, okay?
You even could right.
You and could then you could have gone you could have gone elite wide receiver
trade.
And still gone Manziel later in the draft.
Or Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that could have gone in a better direction.
Let's not take this show
in
that way.
Draft. Certainly, but it is interesting. I just like that Goff's got the confidence to do it. I think that says a lot about his makeup. I'm excited.
I think my favorite is Paxton Lynch, but I know that he can't play right away.
Did you watch? He's very raw, and physically
Is he a beer drinker, Gibbs? Is that why you're a fan?
Why do you like Paxton Lynch?
I got to watch him a couple times, especially on flights when we were flying somewhere.
Did you watch him at all in the second half of the year?
A little bit. I mean, it was hit or miss. The stuff I saw, I thought he performed. The thing that scares me about Goff is every time there was a meaningful game, he pooped down his leg.
If you go back and watch that Utah game, which a lot of people point to, which Matt and I watched a lot of it, he actually didn't. He actually played pretty well. 3 of the interceptions were off of perfectly thrown balls, and they
correct.
Tried to make
and
some
and
plays.
I'm not talking about just the Utah game. I just thought that he didn't play well in
he had a
some
couple
of the
game stretch,
games.
And then he bounced back from that and played great down the stretch.
I think you have to take some of what you saw. And I know that's how we evaluate talent is, you know, wins and losses and their production, so on and so forth. But how many people have we had on this show in the last 10 days and we've asked a Goff question and they in some way, shape, and form in their answer say, well, that was a horrible Cal program and that was a bad Cal football team. It's not like Jared Goff has got, you know, all his receivers with, you know, first 3-round grades over the past 3 years and, like, you know, tackles getting drafted in the first round that have protected Jared Goff.
No.
And a running back that's playing somewhere in the National Football League or a tight end. You know, no, it's Jared Goff and a bunch of guys.
Well, Jared Goff, and he went to Cal because his father went to Cal and that was important right. to him and that's where he always wanted to go. I think he could have probably gone to a better program. But, no, he doesn't have the talent.
That's what I'm saying. That's my point. So you have to take that. So to be as productive, and what I love about that, to be optimistic, is a guy that's not at a premium program but as a premium talent didn't settle for status quo, continue to get more accurate every year, to continue to have better feet year after year, continue to make all
work.
The throws,
yeah.
to stay in the pocket. He was the work associated with, you know, ironically having his best year, which that's kind of put him in a position to be in talks at number 2 for the Cleveland Browns or being at least 5 to 7 picks away from where Carson Wentz is going to be in the number 1 quarterback in this draft.
Well, yeah, and we had, if you remember, and we had the guy from Steve Palazzolo yesterday from Pro Football Focus, and they grade every single play of these quarterbacks, and they had him at number 5 overall last year, and then he moved up to number 1 this year. So he was a guy that they certainly were very, very, very excited about.
You know, but we go back and we're talking about all these quarterbacks from 2 years ago. There was only one taken in the top five. And there was only one taken in the top 10. And one total in the top 15 and top 20. So, I mean, are the guys we're talking about today top 10 material?
Again, I think that if a quarterback turns out to be your franchise quarterback, he's worth the number one overall pick. You can't.
Like Jacksonville was sold on Bortles.
Right, and so they took him. But I think if you went back and did that draft again right now, Houston would have taken a quarterback number one overall. Jacksonville would have taken a quarterback number three, and I bet we would have taken a quarterback number four. Actually, let me rephrase that. If that draft happened again, quarterback would go, Houston would take whoever their favorite quarterback was out of Bortles, Carr, and Teddy. St. Louis at number two would have taken whoever was their favorite quarterback that was left. And at number three, Jacksonville would take quarterback.
Which means we don't get a quarterback.
Which means we would have been, or maybe we would have taken Jimmy Garoppolo. Who knows?
Here's the thing.
Or we would have ended up with
Clowney. If you went back and redrafted today, this might be actually a really good question. Do you take one of the quarterbacks, or are you taking Khalil Mack? Where's Khalil Mack fall in that?
If I could get, and I would rank them this way, Teddy, Carr, Bortles, I would probably, I don't know if I still don't, I'm still not
are
totally
you
sold
Khalil
on
Mack
Bortles.
Ahead of Bortles?
I don't know, because I don't think Khalil Mack impacts my franchise as much as having that quarterback does.
See, while I agree with the whole quarterback thing, that guy's going to be a starting linebacker and an all-pro linebacker for maybe the next 10 to 12 years.
Okay.
I mean, he's going to be the captain of your defense.
He's
going
to be the equivalent to a Joe Thomas for you.
But let me ask you this, though. If Houston, for example, had that draft to do over again, do you think there's any doubt, and they took Clowney over a quarterback, that they would take Mack or that they would take a quarterback?
I think they'd have to go quarterback.
Right. So I just think that's the value proposition you're looking at. I mean, you wouldn't reach, but I think with the benefit of hindsight, with 2 years now, you know that. First of all, you know you can win with Teddy. You know that Carr and Bortles have significant upside. So, and those teams are not even thinking about quarterback now. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Oakland's lucky enough that they were able to get both in the same draft because of buffoonery.
Reggie McKenzie.
Because of buffoonery.
Yes.
But if I was the Browns, let's say, and it did go quarterback, and Johnny was the last quarterback there, I'm not taking Johnny. I still would have probably made either our trade that we made with Buffalo to go 4-9 and pick up a future first, or you stay there and you take Khalil Mack. I'd like to go from 4-9 still, because if it goes quarterback, that just is pushing the talent down. You're going to get a superstar, especially in that draft. When we look back at it, it's easy to get a superstar at number 9, plus you're getting a future first. But it is interesting, a topic, and an interesting food for thought, Gibbs.
I don't know. I look at all the great players that came out of that draft, and I just go, wow. Outside of Betonio, what do you have? Kirksey was a solid pick where he was taken, but all the talent in the first round and the second round, you don't have anybody except for Betonio. You had three picks.
I mean, if you had to do it over again, if I had to do it over again, it would be pretty easy for me. I would make the trade with Buffalo to go from 4-9, pick up the future first. I would have taken Teddy at number 9. I would have come back in the pick in the late 20s and probably tried to move back again and pick up something else. Take Betonio at 35, and then when I moved back from the first, I'm guessing that I'm going to either stay in the first or get into the early second, and that's where I would have taken Allen Robinson.
You and your boy.
You just won't give it up.
I won't, but I'm being serious. And I said it back then. I mean, it's not like a huge leap of logic for me, but that's, and you could have done that and picked up probably two more future picks that were early and gotten the guys you wanted. It was just when you look back at that draft, to have not gotten quality starters out of that pick draft is rough. It is very difficult to deal with. Very difficult. We're going to have Raj Sharan at 1:30, the Broncos reporter for 104.3 ESPN Radio in Denver, live from the Super Bowl to give us the Broncos side of things. at the NFL Honors this Saturday night. Give us your winners so you can call and tweet us. This is what we want to know. Coach of the year, offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year, NFL MVP. We'll also talk some Todd McShay mock draft at 2:30 where he's got, you got it, Goff coming this way. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura and Wilhelm. Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura and Wilhelm, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Want to call us up. Again, we'll go through the awards later on. Coach of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, NFL MVP.
This is easy.
I think they are pretty easy. There's only – there aren't too many that I feel a big toss-up on. MVP is an interesting one.
Who? Total?
Yeah.
Zagura, okay. I was going to ask you separately, your fantasy football player of the year.
Fantasy football player of the year.
Yes.
Okay, I'll ponder that at 2 o'clock. Or you want to get into it now? I mean,
No, we can do it at 2:30.
If I'm thinking about right now, I'm guessing, off the top of my head, I think Rob Gronkowski is up there.
Uh-huh.
Because he's so dominant at his
position. What about your boy?
Who?
Allen Robinson?
Yeah, but I would call him, I don't know if I would call him the player of the year. Russell Wilson was the player of a stretch. Doug Baldwin was unbelievable for a stretch. But I think probably for the year, Gronk probably returned the most value of anybody for their team, I would think. I'm going to look into this. I'm going to come up with a good answer for you.
Perfect. I wanted to give you that heads up. I didn't want to include it because Wilhelm doesn't do fantasy.
I played a little early in the season.
He does?
Once I blow through my credits, I'm out.
He did all right. Yeah, you like
it. I'm not pumping my money into these sucker bets. That's really what it is for the common man. Sorry.
What about a weekly
thing? When individuals,
I'm not talking.
When people – I know Nathan is way into – this is what I've learned this year about fantasy football. Okay. First of all, states, not cities, not counties, states are trying to outlaw them. Okay. Big red flag.
That's
right?
Like FanDuel and stuff. Oh, that's not normal.
No,
fantasy
this is
football.
What I'm talking. Oh, this that's kind of what I'm talking about. Okay, but I mean, at your house on Yahoo
FanDuel's
or through NFL.com,
fine establishment.
Okay, that's all fine and good. But from some point, like I said, when I blew through my credits, I played a little bit of fantasy because it was through the NFL. You know, it was sanctioned with former players. That's all fine and good. Came up on the short end of that stick. But when I've got to compete against like algorithms and guys that are pumping in thousands of dollars into these pools,
hey, you're not gonna
and
win.
I'm putting in my $2 or $5 or 25 cents or $20, I got no shot, okay? Because I'm going based on my football knowledge, and I go, you know what? DeSean Jackson plays really well against this corner and has every year, and he's due, you know, to have a day.
Sure.
Okay? And he goes for 47 yards, you know, and negative rushing yards on a reverse. And somebody picks the third wide receiver – you know, on some team, and the guy goes for 27. Then it's like, just shoot me in the face.
That's why there's a difference between the daily fantasy and those big contests, and then, of course, between fantasy.
Yeah, but I guess this is the public service announcement to start, for everyone out there to stop pouring your money into it because you got no shot.
That's okay, first of all, you're limiting.
I bought a Powerball ticket, too.
You don't understand the landscape of daily fantasy. That's just those mega contests are but one very small piece.
No, I know that.
You can still play head-to-head. You can set up leagues where it's a 10-person
league.
Too
much work.
And five out of the 10
people.
I want
to go on there. I want to spend my money.
You can. You can jump right into an existing. It's called a double-up. So if there's a 20-person league, 10-person
league,
100-person.
If you're on the top 50%, you double your money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those you can compete. You're talking about the giant contest, the million-dollar ones. First of all, anybody can get lucky and win them. And I think, you know, you looked at some of the people who won the Cleveland Browns contest. I don't think those were computer algorithms that were winning those contests. So
all I know is when we had somebody in here in the studio, he was talking smack about beating you. Okay.
I didn't even play him.
He said he beat you.
Well, mazel tov.
If they were beating you, they're beating me. yeah, I'm keeping my money in my pocket.
You never know, because it comes down to touchdowns, comes down to getting lucky. I mean, I think, and you're right, it's identifying the little things. But there are many ways to play on FanDuel, who's a tremendous partner of the Cleveland Browns. There's many ways to play on FanDuel. You can go to FanDuel.com/Segura,
for example.
Or play regular fantasy football.
Are you playing basketball?
We have a lot of Wilhelm.
But basketball is apparently pretty easy.
Wilhelm, we have mutual friends, and I believe you understand how bad I was this year.
Yeah, I do.
But the draft night?
You've been bad for like 5 years in a row, I've heard.
No, not the case. I have trophies, my friend. Trophies that sit on the mantle. The lady's not pleased about where those are placed. But
right on the mantle.
Those were earned trophies.
Congratulations, Gibbs.
See? Come on now.
All right, good. Well, one trophy that the Broncos hope to hoist is the Vince Lombardi Trophy at the end of Super Bowl 50. Rod Sharon, the Broncos reporter from 104.3 ESPN Radio in Denver, live from the Super Bowl, will be with us next.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagur and Wilhelm will go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now and bring in Raj Sharon, the Broncos reporter for 104.3 ESPN Radio in Denver, covering the Broncos at Super Bowl 50. Raj, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be on with you guys.
Raj, when you look at this game, what is the most important thing for the Denver Broncos, who are a pretty big underdog by Super Bowl standards, to come in and get this W?
Do not turn over the football. That is the mantra, that is the game plan. If you guys saw when the Broncos played the Browns early this season, Peyton Manning was a turnover machine. If he reverts back to that Peyton, they have no chance to upset the Carolina Panthers on Super Bowl Sunday. The game plan for Denver, I would imagine, will be very similar to what we saw in the divisional round against Pittsburgh and in the conference championship against New England. Hope the offense does not turn the ball over just enough offensively, and they rely on that great defense for one more game to carry the team to a championship. That's the game plan.
And, Raj, I have a special, you know, link to the Denver Broncos that's near and dear to my heart. Fred Pugich was my linebacker coach at Ohio State, defense coordinator, and Wade Phillips was my coordinator with San Diego Chargers. So I am very much in the Broncos side of things. But yet Ron Rivera was my linebacker coach too, so I'm kind of split. But that all being said is, along with not turning the football over, Wade Phillips' ability to create a game plan and have the bullets in the gun, which the Denver Broncos have defensively, to be able to go out and execute that plan the way they did against Tom Brady, do you think that their ability, and if they do it at a high level and have no turnovers or limit it offensively, that they could be in this game and maybe come down to a last possession because of the defense executing Wade's plan?
I think they can, and I think they think that they can do that, and that's more important than what any of us believe. When you look at it and you analyze attacking Cam Newton and his offense compared to Tom Brady, compared to Ben Roethlisberger, it's such a different matchup because a lot of the things that Carolina does offensively negate Denver's greatest strengths. For many respects, that's what made it such a great defensive game plan against New England. Tom Brady wasn't going anywhere. He was sitting in the pocket, and that allowed Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe to just kind of sit back and tee off. Well, as you well know, if you get out of your rush lanes, if you're not disciplined and with your contain, Cam Newton will break that and he'll kill you. So from some respects, Wade, they installed the game plan a week ago before they headed out to California. They're just kind of touching it up and going over it this week. So they have whatever plan it's going to be. I don't know if that's going to include a spy on Cam Newton. I don't know how that's going to involve Von Miller, who they can move around to a lot of different positions, but it is a different game plan. From some respects, Arizona would have been a much better matchup for Denver because their defense is built to face more conventional offenses. This is a little unconventional. Teams really haven't even tried to run the football that much on Denver this season. They're going to face a team now that's undefeated when they run the ball. I believe it's over 28 attempts. So a different kind of game plan. They've been used to, especially with Roethlisberger and Brady, in their last two games, facing quarterbacks who, and I know Ben will move around a little bit, but predominantly are passing, you know, pocket quarterbacks with Cam. You know, he may have 8 to 10 design quarterback runs in this game when they spread the field out. So Wade is, in many respects, and we've talked about it here in Denver, guys, Wade may need to be the MVP of this game, even if he's not a player, if the Broncos are going to win. He's going to have to come up with a scheme because we believe the Denver talent matches up well with the Carolina talent. But it's how do you use that talent? Von Miller is a great player. So is DeMarcus Ware, Chris Harris, Keith Sleep, all these guys. But in what position are you going to put them against a Carolina offense that can throw you anything from reverses to zone read to just straight-up play-action passing? They really have to be ready for everything, which is a stark contrast from the last two games against New England and Pittsburgh when they knew neither of those teams were going to go crazy trying to run the ball. It's more of a straight-up passing attack.
They're going to have to be ready for a lot of Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton. Talking with Raj Sharon, the Broncos reporter for 104.3 ESPN Radio in Denver. Raj, when you look at stopping this team, Chris Harris, the shoulder, how bad is it? Because he had, I thought, been their best corner for the majority of the season, but you could tell in that game against Pittsburgh, not at 100%.
Yeah, it's better. And it was a little bit better against New England than it was against Pittsburgh. So you'd have to hope with the extra week of rest, it'll be that much better. And you're right. Chris actually is graded out, if you look at Pro Football Focus rankings, as one of the better man coverage cornerbacks in the league over the last few years. And they're going to need him in this game, because if you look at how you beat this Carolina team, you have to be able to beat them in coverage. Because with everything what Cam does, you want to make him hold the football. That's essentially where you can try to get to. Make him hold the football an extra second. If Chris Harris is 100%, along with Aqib Talib and then the former Ohio State product that you guys are familiar with, Bradley Roby, you put those three guys together, you feel pretty good about the matchup against the Carolina Panthers wide receivers, with Ted Ginn being the number one guy. But if Chris is injured and he's not 100%, I don't think it'll be 100%. I think it'll be closer to it. You may have to hide him. Maybe you don't put him on Ted Ginn. I think Roby's going to draw the assignment on Ted Ginn in this game, and they're going to be content to use Chris Harris in the slot like they did against Julian Edelman in the AFC Championship. But those aren't the only injuries in the secondary they have to worry about. Both of their safeties, Darian Stewart and T.J. Ward, are dealing with injuries and didn't finish the AFC Championship game. Stewart's dealing with an MCL sprain. Ward's got an ankle sprain. They've both been limited at practice. The Broncos say they are on track to start in the Super Bowl. But we saw in the AFC title game when both got hurt, that's when Brady started finding Gronk down the seams. The passing game opened up a little bit. You go back to late in the regular season, they were both injured against Pittsburgh, and that's when Antonio Brown was able to get some big plays over the top because of miscommunication with the safety. They're actually down their top three safeties because their third safety, David Bruton, is on injured reserve. Guys, late in that AFC title game, and this would be a nightmare for the Broncos in the Super Bowl, their two safeties were Josh Bush, Shiloh Kao, guys they picked up off the street in December for a potential Super Bowl team.
Wow.
With both safeties. So they're really hoping to get those two, as well as Chris, as close to 100% as they can for this game, because ideally that's probably the best mismatch in favor of Denver, would be their secondary, if healthy, against Carolina's receivers.
So we've talked an awful lot about the Broncos' defense and what they have to do against Cam and some of the injuries and executing that Wade Phillips game plan. But as you flip it, the Panthers obviously play a great defense led by Thomas Davis, who seems to be 100%, Jared Allen returning, Luke Kuechly, and of course Josh Norman at one corner. So as far as you know, what do you believe is the recipe for success offensively for the Denver Broncos and how they're going to attack a very good Panther defense?
Boy, multiple ways to look at it, because the way that Carolina plays defense, they and I don't believe it's more than any team in the league, but it's as much as any team in the league, leave three linebackers on the field. So if this was the Peyton Manning and his offense from 2 years ago, you'd probably be licking your chops to spread the field and throw the football. But it's a little bit of a different situation now. The Broncos want to be able to run the football. I don't know if they'll be able to, at least successfully, but they can't give up on it. And to Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennis and their offensive coordinator's credit, the last two games, they didn't do that. They stayed with the running game, even though it may have only been getting a yard, 2 yards, that kind of thing, and then eventually, C.J. Anderson would pop one. They need to do that again in this game, because the biggest weakness on the Broncos team is their offensive line in straight pass protection. If they stick Peyton back in the gun of the pistol and ask him to drop back and throw the ball 50 times, we may have a repeat of what we saw 2 years ago at Denver and Seattle. It could get ugly. They have to be able to run the football, give Peyton the opportunity to throw off of play action. And I'll give you a name to keep an eye on, guys, for this game. And it's just kind of from talking to people around the organization. And I thought we might see it in the AFC title game, but they wound up getting a lead and then just kind of sat on it. But if it's a close game with those linebackers, there could be opportunities for an athletic tight end to make some plays. The Broncos picked up Vernon Davis around the trade deadline this year. they have not used him that much, going back to a game against the Raiders here at home when he dropped a wide open fourth down pass and lost the game. He just really hasn't been a big part of the offense since. From what I've been told, he's looked very good at practice. And don't be surprised if, you know, teams like to throw a little wrinkle in the Super Bowl. Don't be surprised if that might be something the Broncos think they can take advantage of. With so much focus going to be on Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders on the outside and maybe running the football, they might try to get Vernon Davis matched up on, say, a Thomas Davis or a Shaq Thompson, create a little bit of a mismatch down the seams because, well, Vernon obviously has a big drop on fourth down. There's no questioning his speed. And that might give the Broncos a little bit of an element that not many people are talking about during this football game.
He did score in the playoff meeting in 2013 against Carolina, one catch on that day, but it went for a touchdown against the Carolina Panthers. I'm sure the Denver Broncos would be happy with that. I got to ask you this. You talked about the running game, and you'd say they kind of get nothing, then C.J. Anderson would break one. Over the last, 11, 12 weeks, C.J. Anderson's averaging about 6 yards a carry. Ronnie Hillman's averaging about 3. We know what he did in the second half of the 2014 season. Why isn't C.J. Anderson getting the ball every time?
Well, a lot of it comes down to C.J.'s inability to stay healthy, and that's been a big issue early this season. He was constantly dinged. When he would start to look like, okay, he's getting 100%, whether it was a turf toe or an ankle, whatever it was he was dealing with at the time, then something else would come up. And the other thing, guys, is the offensive line. Again, it's not a great O-line at all. It's the Broncos' big weakness. Hillman, with that little bit more speed, although he's a smaller guy, they liked his ability to hit those holes since they're smaller and they close smaller. And then maybe use C.J. Coming off the bench to kind of wear on teams later in the game. And that's really the formula they've gone with through the majority of the season. Now, Ronnie, as fast as he is, he really hasn't broken a lot of runs this year. And one really long run that he broke early in the season, I think it was against Minnesota. Other than that, he hasn't necessarily done so. But, again, it's kind of going back to that it's not broken, so why fix it kind of thing with their running game. And I think they like being able to use CJ to wear on teams later in the game. So I expect Ronnie's still going to start. I think they'll both get plenty of carries in this game, unless things obviously get ugly and get out of control early. I think the Broncos, in a perfect world, their game plan would be to probably finish with around 30 carries or so. And I would imagine it might be some combination of 15 for CJ and 15 for Ronnie, or 20 for CJ and 10 for Ronnie, something like that. That they'd like to be where that they kind of hang around that area, because CJ, while considered the bruising back and Ronnie's speed guy, CJ does have the ability to break a long run.
Sure.
And that's one reason they like continuing to feed him the football. So I think he'll get the ball a fair amount going into the Super Bowl game, but they don't want to give up on Ronnie Hillman just because he does have that ability. If there's just a small crack, he can break a big run. And that's one thing they like about Ronnie. Ronnie is probably the fastest player on the team.
Last one for me. Overall, I know you've been back and forth between San Francisco and Denver. Have you been very happy with Gary Kubiak's approach to having this team primed and ready, rested and relaxed for this football game on Sunday?
Yes. It is a complete 180 from two seasons ago under John Fox when they were in New York City. It just seems to be a nice balance. They don't appear to be tight like they did 2 years ago. They're loose. I'll be honest, guys. The Broncos are kind of playing with house money. I can make a strong argument. This is the worst team of the four that Peyton Manning has had here in Denver, yet they're somehow here in the Super Bowl. And if a ball maybe bounces one way or not, they could come away with a Lombardi trophy. But Kubiak has really done a nice job of telling the guys, look, yes, it is. Because you don't hear people say it's another game, and it is. You have to approach it just like another game. But enjoy the experience, because you don't know when you'll ever get back here again. I think that's rubbed off on Peyton Manning as well. I've noticed a much different Peyton Manning this time than two trips ago. And they're enjoying their role as the underdog versus being the team that was the highest-scoring offense in NFL history and had to win the Super Bowl against Seattle. Now, look, they know no one's picking them. They understand that, just like 2 weeks ago in the AFC title game against New England. That they're relishing that role. I think Kubiak has handled it very well. They appear to be a loose football team. And I also think they have a measure of confidence that, look, we beat Ben Roethlisberger, we beat Tom Brady, we can beat Cam Newton. This isn't an impossible task, even though maybe nobody's given us the shot. I think Kubiak's found a nice balance. Keep in mind, Gary was on both of those Broncos championship teams on the staff as the offensive coordinator, the one in the 90s, and he was also on San Francisco's team, Steve Young's team, that won. So he's been a part of winning Super Bowl teams. He knows the routine. He knows the schedule, and he kind of knows from being underneath of George Seifert and later Mike Shanahan what those teams did to be successful, and he's emulating that.
Do you think this is it for Peyton Manning in Denver and in the
NFL? I definitely think it's it in Denver. There's always that small window if he wants to play another year. I don't see him coming back to Denver, especially as rough as this year went with him with the injury and then Brock coming in. And honestly, guys, Peyton could have came back sooner than he did, but they were rolling with Brock at the time. So there's always that outside chance. I know the report from Adam Schefter came out that the Rams in L.A. would be a possibility. I don't think it. I think this is Peyton's last game, if I had to bet. Again, there's always that kind of window open, but I definitely don't see him back in Denver next year. I expect Brock Osweiler is going to be the Broncos quarterback coming up next season, assuming they can re-sign him in free agency.
Raj, appreciate the time very much. Thank you so much for being with us, and it'll be an interesting one on Sunday. It's almost so many people seem to think it's a foregone conclusion, but you got the best defense in the NFL out there for the Denver Broncos, and I think it'll be tighter than people maybe think on Sunday.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And look, guys, because I know I get some friends in the Cleveland area that are, oh, 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. We wish the Browns could be that good. Look, you have LeBron James, okay? The Nuggets.
He's got to win.
Been to a final. The Nuggets have never even been to a final. So at least you guys have LeBron.
That's true. At least we do. We just need him to win us that title, then we'll all be good.
Then we'll all be. Well, let's have the Broncos win the Super Bowl. Then let's see the Cavaliers win the NBA title, and we'll hold a joint parade.
We'll take that. I don't know how many Cavalier fans are going to be Broncos fans after what John Elway did all those years ago, but we'll take it if that's what gets us the title. Appreciate the time, Raj. Thanks so much.
No problem, guys. Have a wonderful day.
All right, take care. All right, we'll be back with your phone calls. Call us up, 216-578-0850. You can tweet us, obviously, at Nathan Zagura, at Browns_daily as well. It is Zagura. It is Wilhelm. It is Gibbs. CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura Wilhelm, we'll go to the phone lines now, 216-578-0850. Ben is in Warren. Ben, how are you?
Good, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing today?
Not too bad. I was going to address the theme that I hear on the show all the time of people calling in repeatedly, acting like the only people that we can draft to the Browns this year are Ohio State Buckeyes. And I think that's ridiculous and blurs a lot of, like, how you assess the value of a player. If you got two guys that are rated like four-star athletes, you don't give a guy an extra star because he was born in Ohio. You know what I mean? I feel like we should take the best player available.
You may not, but some people who call this program, Scotty Buckeye, right? Would, that's for sure. No, I hear you. And I've said that many times. Like, I wonder if, you know, remember all the hype about Terrell Pryor. If we weren't the Cleveland Browns, if we were the Jacksonville Jaguars, would anybody care about Terrell Pryor? Probably not.
No.
It's just Ohio has an affinity for Ohio things unlike any state that I've lived in before. And I've lived in California, which loves California, but rightfully so. It's only would be the fifth largest GDP as a nation in the world, but it's just a state. And of course Georgia, where Georgia has a lot of pride, but you don't get, like, I never heard anybody talk about the Falcons need to only draft UGA players. Now granted, Ohio State happens to be one of the top 2-3 college football programs,
and I mean this year in particular they're going to produce more talent,
sure, but we get it with everything. Ted Ginn, Brian Hartline, Terrell Pryor, Braxton, anybody.
Well, and the thing about it is,
Troy Smith,
this
is
something,
he was floating around the
this
league.
Is something that should, you know, you can take with a grain of salt if you want, but
maybe I won't.
Dante, at the end of his career, wanted to come back to Cleveland. There was a mutual interest.
He's from Cleveland.
He's from Cleveland. That's right. My whole point. Brian Hartline, you know, onto his second venture in his NFL career, had an interest in coming to Cleveland, went to other places, chose Cleveland. Cleveland also chose him. And ironically, you can't say it's worked out for the best. You know, he's under contract. He'll come back and hopefully be healthy and have another great year. Ultimately, there were links to me always. Would you want to come back to Cleveland? And my answer was just like, no. It's too distracting, you know?
Yeah.
I know the two times that I played in Cleveland, I had to produce like 70 tickets. I don't want to deal with that on 8 times a year, you know, where everybody's your best friend and
you want to sit in the nosebleeds, I'll pay for a $20 ticket. Don't expect to be 50-yard line second row
right.
with my mom, my dad, and my wife, and my kids. No, that ain't going to happen. Sorry. You're an acquaintance
right.
you know, from the Cleveland area. But
could you imagine if Josh Lenz, by the way, was an Ohio State Buckeye? People, they might have burned this building down when he got
He'd have
cut.
A statue outside of the yeah, horseshoe right
exactly.
now. But it's just you'll find that's why there was the rumors, you know, that Bosa didn't want to come to Cleveland with, you know, us having the number two overall pick. Devin Smith last year at the NFL draft, the rumors that I caught, he didn't say it to me, but he didn't want to come to Cleveland, you know? So there's got to be a mutual interest, and I know in the draft it's the one time where the team has the say, but there's got to be a mutual interest, and I think that's a question, that's a good question for Sasha to ask. You know, can
sure.
you and I'm sure he was asked Hugh Jackson, are you ready to embrace where we're at as a franchise and also understand how great it's going to be when we get to where we want to get, because there's no fan base like this, and those people that don't mind walking into adversity. And I think that's in some cases, you bring up a name. Johnny Manziel expected to walk into this thing and truly wreck this league. Knowing who he is now, rewinding almost 2 years to the day, you know, or a few months less to the day, his mind was, ha, college came so easy. Draft me. I'm going to wreck this league. No, he's actually wrecked himself more than he's wrecked this league. So who's the joke on?
Right.
And yeah. I think that, in some cases, is why that statement that came out earlier this week was so profound to me.
Yes, indeed. You all right? No, and I think that's a good point. Sam in Sandusky, welcome. Fired up, Wilhelm.
I love the show.
Thank you.
I was wondering how it benefits the Cleveland area to have the Browns training camp move to Columbus. I look forward to your reply.
How what? What was the question?
How it benefits the Cleveland area.
Training camp to Columbus.
I don't know how it benefits. This is how I would say that it benefits the Cleveland area. What?
Go ahead.
This is, if the decision is made about that, and by the way, the 2016 training camp will be held in Berea regardless of the future location of training camp. They remain committed to hosting open practices for fans at our year-round facility in Berea. So that's not there. This is how it would benefit Cleveland. It's a concept that the football operations group, if you move it away, and many teams do this.
Yes.
Many teams go off-site. The New Orleans Saints, for example, are at the Greenbrier now. That's not even in the same state.
My rookie year in San Diego, my first 2 years in San Diego, ironically, we had training camp at the Home Depot Center, which is actually in Carson, California, about 45 minutes outside of L.A., so an hour and a half from
basically the same distance.
Our training camp, our you know, year-in, year-out facility in San Diego, California. And it was, in this case, and I'm not saying, you know, that from the Cleveland Browns case it was a strategic plan by the Chargers organization that without an NFL franchise, and mind you, this was 2003, without an NFL franchise in L.A., you want to grab some market share. So it didn't technically benefit the people of San Diego, but it did because you're drawing Los Angeles, Orange County revenue south to Qualcomm Stadium to spend their money in and around the restaurants that surround Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. So there is some benefit.
So that would be the economic benefit. But I think the real benefit of it would be, and you tell me, did you do training camp at home where you were able to go home every day as opposed to...
No, you're still in a hotel.
Or in a hotel, or as opposed to being like away from all of that. Did you do both? Like when you were...
Yeah.
Okay. Which did you think was better for the football team?
Being at your facility.
Being home.
Yes.
Okay. So
I thought so.
Okay.
And but take this into account, and I've made it, you know, very, very aware of the success that we had in San Diego. Okay.
See, I was surprised you said it because I thought with all the distractions and family and this that you, it's like good to get everybody away. That's the reason they would end up being good for Cleveland if it's good for the football team.
This is the point that I was going to make. When we returned back from the Home Depot after the 2 years, we went 4-12 the first year, and it felt like a train wreck. We went 12-4 the next year, you know, soon thereafter, still at the Home Depot, and you know, all the coaches, management, everybody made the decision to come back to Charger Park there in San Diego and had our practice. But it was the professionalism and the individuals and the direction of the team was significantly different than where it was 2 years prior when it made the decision to go elsewhere.
Sure.
So we came back and we were able to handle being at home or having home type comforts and influences around us because we are so dedicated to our profession to do the right things that we didn't need to be taken away just to be focused, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I can understand why you haven't got it right. You've got it right twice out of 16 where you're over, you know, two out of 16 times where you're over 8 wins in a football season. Why you'd want to break the norm and get take the team away to help them focus and to be able to come back into this marketplace and provide a better product than they've seen in a very long time.
Right, it's fine. I mean, you know, Dallas does it. Dallas goes into California.
Yeah.
The Saints go up into West Virginia. So they're leaving their state. The Browns wouldn't be if it does end up, and again, nothing's been decided, but if it does end up in Columbus, it's not going out of state, taking it away.
No.
People still would have the option to go there, and there still will be practices here in Berea. Really what it's about is if they feel, obviously there's economic benefits for it, but if they feel that it helps the football team, that's what the benefit would be for Cleveland. Let's get a winner here. I mean, that's what it's all about. So if they think they can do that, they will do that, and hopefully it will all work out. When we come back, we'll take more phone calls. We'll also get into our season-long awards here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by me, Matt, and Gibbs.